want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore. Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Welcome to hour number two, and you are listening to the Common Sense Show. And if you're a new listener, we come to you live at this time every Sunday evening from 5 p.m. Pacific to 8 p.m. And on the East Coast, of course, that's 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. We have new and improved hours, and as a result, our listenership has really gone up dramatically, and we appreciate you listening to us. Our thanks to Joseph Meyer for talking to us about the world of overpriced water, and that's certainly something we're going to be facing. This hour, our guest is Robert Griswold from ReadyMadeResources.com, and if that sounds familiar, you're correct, because Bob is one of our advertisers here on the show. But he's not here to advertise tonight. He's here to talk to us about a couple of very grim topics. Number one, he's going to elaborate a little bit on the water situation and what you can do to get prepared. But we're going to spend the bulk of our time talking about his exposure to critical incident training, how to be situationally aware, and imparting some tips to us so we can lessen our chances of being a victim if we're caught in a terrorist event. Bob, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Good evening today, Dave. It's a pleasure to be back.
Well, it's always great to have you back. And so we spent the bulk of the hour, last hour, talking about water and water preparedness. I know you're concerned about it. So let me get a few comments from you before we jump into what's gone on in Paris.
Well, as far as water preparedness, we all know that you have just a few days without clean drinking water and you will die. Many people around the planet right now do not even have access to clean drinking water. So, you know, we have water that's contaminated. As far as in water preparations, the number one thing you need to have is the source to be able to produce clean drinking water. And I think we all know that.
Yeah, I think there's no question that has got to be a priority. Are you recommending that people not only have adaptive materials like Berkey water filters, but are you also recommending the storage of water? And if so, how should they be storing it?
Well, a lot of that depends on where you live. Generally, yes. If the water turns off, you have water available in your home. It's very limited. If you have a hot water heater, you have water in there. The back of a toilet bowl tank, you have water in there. You can't have water in several other places. But the majority of people in the United States might not have access to a lake, a stream, a pond, even a well where they can get water out. So storing water at least for 30 days, to me, is critical, considering that you're going to need about 2 gallons a day. That's, 60 gallons a day, 60 gallons per person per month. So, yes, if you do not have a means to a continuous flowing stream of water or, pond, you need to have some type of water storage in your home. It's not difficult. You can store water, even if you're purchasing it, you will be the most expensive way is to store it, buying store-bought water. But you can get the rain catch barrels. You can get large bladders. It's like a 100, 200, 300-gallon bladder. Aqua Tank makes them where you can store the water and keep it ready for when you need it. You do have to treat the water with whatever material you use. There's a dozen things you can treat it with, whether it's chlorine bleach. You can use aerobic oxygen. They make numerous products to treat it with, but even then you would want to be able to filter it after you take it out of the tank, and so that you are doubly sure that you're not going to get some kind of contaminant or microorganism and consume it and get sick.
This is really... If society goes to hell in a handbasket, Bob, this is really something that I think could be the number one threat to people, other than maybe civil disobedience and the social chaos.
Well, it will be. If the water turns off, people will become very desperate very quick. You know, if you don't have access to the clean drinking water, you will try to find and drink something. It's also important to know how to maybe make an improvised filter where you can do that. There's examples of it using sand and carbon, like reed type, like grass reed type material, where you can make an improvised water filter to clean your water. Again, having a disinfectant on hand such as bleach, so that you can take a water that you would get out of a pond or a stream or even a mud puddle and know how to filter that water. It will be something that people compromise with, and if they compromise really quick, they're going to see a lot of people with a waterborne disease becoming either ill or deathly ill, and without the ability to maybe seek medical attention, you're going to see people getting very sick, and some of them will die.
Just hearing you talk about these improvisations, you remind me of MacGyver. Do you remember that TV show from the 80s?
Yes, I do. I enjoyed that very much.
I mean that in the most flattering term possible here, but you're talking about doing something that I don't, quite frankly, think I have the expertise to do, but if you hand me a Berkey water filter, I know what to do with that.
Yeah, I mean, the Berkey water filter is an extremely good, probably the most popular in-home water filter that you can have. Millions of them are in use around the country, and they do take water down to the clean level. That I think it's 99.99999 of all your bacteria, your spores, and two of the main things you're going to deal with are diseases. There's a spore and a bacteria, Cryptosporidium and Giardia. Those are the two main waterborne diseases, but there are others out there. And both of those, I've known people that have had them, and they really do. How to put it politely, they evacuate you extremely well. You're in a position to where you're going to become electrolyte imbalanced because of the amount of time you spend on the toilet.
Interesting. Not very appealing, but interesting.
No.
Okay, well, I know you've got, and I'm not trying to give you a shameless plug here, but you certainly have no shortage of water purification products and water strategies available at readymaderesources.com. But in light of the gravity of the situation in Paris and the applicability of these situations here in the United States, with your permission, I would like to jump to this topic and talk about situational awareness. And let me just kind of set the stage. After the Batman shootings in Aurora, which, by the way, I grew up less than 2 miles from that movie theater as a kid, but we were in... 2 weeks later in a movie theater in the Phoenix area, my family and I, and the first thing we did, we sat down, where are the exits? And we tried to position ourselves to where, maybe if we had to make a quick getaway, we would. So let's talk about situational awareness and what we can extrapolate from what happened in Paris, how we can help ourselves be better prepared.
Well, first thing you have to have is a mindset. We do live in a very unsafe world, and the majority of Americans live in an area, when they're outside or out and about, they live in this fairyland to where they think nothing is going to happen to them. They know bad things happen, but it's always to the other person. It never will happen to them. Well, I think we are now, that myth is starting to be shattered as we see more and more of these incidents where people, lives are totally upturned because of they're meeting more and more violence. So having a mindset and developing a mindset that it can happen to me is probably one of the most critical things you can do. These things are difficult for us to live and walk through because we have lived in an America where it has been relatively safe. But as we see more and more this discontent discontent with the American society. We see more of this, like this, what's going on in college campuses. We see more and more division among people, where you have factions going against other factions, which happens all over the globe. You see our borders insecure, where we see, I mean, today, the same Syrians that were involved with the Paris thing, thousands of them were brought to the United States. And do we think it's not going to happen here? We have to really live in an illusion to think that we're going to be immune from it. I mean, we're going to have these refugees scattered throughout the United States. So the first thing we have to come under the understanding that it can happen to us, and it will happen in this country. So, you know, have a plan, have a mindset to where I am ready for what happens. You know, it might sound strange, but what I try to do all the time is if I'm standing in line, you try to size people up. What happens if I had to, so that guy goes south? What happens if there was an incident here? If you're standing in line, who's behind you and who's in front of you? Again, as you mentioned, where are the exits? It has been shown over and over again that if you go into a movie theater through the main entrance, no matter where you are at, if you sat down front with a door, another exit 10 feet away off to your right, if there's an incident, most people will try to go back out the way they came in, and in doing that, you know, they're going to probably meet some consequences they don't want to have. So as you said, wherever you are, always pay attention to the exits. My son and I have a 12-year-old boy. We have an active shooter situation wherever we go. If it's out to a mall or whatever, and I want to state that if I do have to go to a mall, if I do have to go to a movie theater, I try not to go on high traffic days. I mean, I don't go to the premiere of the new movie coming out. I don't want to go to the mall during its busiest time, because that's when people who will do bad will do the bad. They probably will not go into a movie theater after it's been out for a couple weeks, because the traffic is not going to be as high. They don't go to the mall maybe at 2 o'clock in the afternoon. They're going to go at 7 o'clock in the afternoon, or 7 o'clock in the evening, when it is busier. So, you know, as you plan going out in that way, try to hit the traffic in a non-critical point where you don't have a high traffic volume that gives a greater sensationalism for violence. Try to avoid that. Try to plan your day so that you work around those things. That I'm not there on Christmas at the peak season. I'm not there, you know, at Black Friday. You know, how many times we've watched those videos of just mindless throngs just, you know, plowing through the door of the discount store, trying to get to the latest TV or whatever, and you see people trampled and run over for saving $50, maybe. I don't know what it is, but, I mean, we watch it. So plan your time around that you avoid high traffic things. People who want to do wicked or evil, people who want to do those active shooter scenarios, usually try to pick a time when they know lots of people will be out and the body count can be high and the shock value is high. So, you know, avoid those times. And go at a time where you're not as busy. It's not as busy. Just a note to keep that in mind. You know, again, always have a plan. Always be adaptable. You know, we hear this thing, even tonight, you know, we give guidelines. We don't give rules. There is no such thing as one rule for each situation. You have to learn to be adaptable. There's not one fix for everything. If in an active shooter situation or what happened in Paris, you know, if you're in a movie theater, the rule could be different than if you're in a cafe. So you always have to evaluate the situation where you're at and be adaptable to that situation. I mean, if you're on an airplane and somebody goes crazy, you can't flee. You can't look for the exits, unless you have a parachute. You know, you can't do that. So you're going to have to be adaptable to that situation. Whereas in the other case, if you are in that movie theater, you know, a moving target. We were talking about this afternoon. I don't know how many people shoot regularly out there, but most people shoot at fixed pieces of paper. And that is really not a very accurate way to practice shooting, because it's not moving. You take a steel plate, a 12-inch steel plate, and put it on a pendulum swinging back and forth, try to hit it then, and it becomes much, much more difficult. People don't realize it if you don't try this, how difficult it is to hit that moving target. So, you know, if you're in the movie theater and something like that happens, again, if you're situationally aware, positioned yourself either in the back of the movie theater so that you can see what's going on, and generally the back of the movie theater does have an exit, or if you're up maybe towards the front, you know where those exits are at, erratic movement out of that movie theater is your best bet to survive, which goes contrary to what they do in these active shooter such scenarios in, like, schools, where they maybe try to huddle everybody together, or they group mass move them out of a door or whatever. You know, all they're doing really is just making targets of these people, and it's not the best way to get yourself out of that situation. So you really have to learn to be adaptable. There are no set rules for every situation. And this, where it comes, you know, what you have to do is, and it's terrible we have to think this way, but if I'm at a restaurant, my wife, for myself, I never sit with my back towards the door, the exit. I'm always facing like the entrance where people would come in, where the cash register's at, because that's maybe where somebody would come in that's going to rob the store. I want to be facing that. I want to know where the exit's at. I'm adaptable there. And so if somebody does come in, I can see what's going on. And again, that situational awareness, that if I am in a restaurant with my wife, I'm not so buried in the moment that I don't know what's going on around me. And developing that sixth sense around me, knowing it's on my six, knowing it's right in front of me, is absolutely crucial in the days in which we live. There are cases over and over again, and you read them all the time, of people just totally unaware that they're in the midst of a crime, crime going on around them. They have their face maybe buried in a cell phone, which, you know, is really probably one of the greatest obstacles to situational awareness that's out there. You know, we see people anymore, their just faces are buried in it, and they're not aware of what's going on around them. And then when the crime does happen, it's easy for them to be caught up in it and become reactive and not proactive. And again, being proactive is, you have a far greater chance of saving your life or saving the lives of those around you being proactive rather than being reactive. You know, as they say, action beats reaction. You know, I've done this example over and over and over and over again, and I've even done it with people who have never done the exercise before. We get a gun that has a workable trigger. There's no ammunition, or it's been rendered safe, put it that way. And we don't recommend people do this unless they know what they're doing. And you charge the weapon, and you can put that gun right in my face with your finger on the trigger. And if I act first to move and take that weapon, by the time your brain tells you that I'm moving and pull that trigger, the average person can take that weapon and get it out of the direction of where they want to point it at you. And then you'll do it hundreds and thousands of times. So that action beats the reaction every single time. And so if we maintain that situational awareness, if at the restaurant or at the movie theater or even on the airplane, wherever, you know, we have a far greater chance to survive. I would say most of those people in that theater froze. And one of the great rules is get off the X. The X is the kill zone. The X is where you just sit there and just be frozen in fear, and you just become a paper target versus that moving target. And if you're the paper target, you're probably not going to make it. If you're the moving target, at least you have a chance.
Well, one of the concerns I have in the public school arena right now is these active shooter drills are pretty much universal, and the strategy is the same. Lock your door, turn off your lights, move the students, if you're the adult in the room, to a corner of the room where they can't look in the window of the door and see you, like you're going to be able to keep people quiet in times like this. And I've had people say to me, what do I do in this situation? We are completely helpless. We can't do anything. What would you recommend to teachers, administrators, and school personnel who get caught up in this kind of faulty training and mentality?
Well, again, I've mentioned Lieutenant Colonel Grossman before. He does a great job on active shooter training and scenarios. I recommend everybody to get his books and read them and developing an active mindset. But just imagine getting the biggest guys in the class. Excuse me, I'm profiling. I don't mean women. I mean guys. Get the biggest, strongest guys in the class. And, you know, you have to look at a schoolroom door. It's usually on the corner. So, and there's usually a solid block wall on one side of that door. Imagine you had two or three guys that butt up against the wall, the door opens, the guy is not trained tactically. He's not going to come in and slice the pie and do that 90-degree sweep to see who's on his right or his left, depending on which side the door's on. And you have those big guys, so when that guy comes in the door, they just, you know, jump him and then start, you know, altering his face. You're being proactive in that situation. Try it sometime. Do it in your own home. Don't hurt your wife, don't hurt your husband. My wife's she just got her third damn black belt. She could, you know, I wouldn't want her to do it to me and be mean. But, you know, put your back up against the wall, have somebody open the door. Your profile is very low. The guy comes walking in the door thinking he's going to find somebody, and you're there right on his flank. The ability for him to turn that weapon to you and get it on you and shoot you, especially if there's two or three of you, is probably not going to happen. And in doing that, you're going to tackle this guy. You're going to, you know, two or three guys, big guys in the class, are going to hold him down and start altering him. You have a far greater chance of survival being that proactive person than huddled in the corner somewhere or trying to shuffle out the window doors. It's insanity what they do. First of all, the insanity of a gun-free zone. Paris is a gun-free country, and I don't know how many more times we have to see, gun-free areas where people are just victims. You know, and I don't mean this callous, Dave. I talked to you about it today. People were saying, you know, let's pray for the people of France. And I was saying, well, what are we going to pray for them about? I mean, you invite the devil to dine with you. What do you expect? And then you have a country that's completely disarmed so that the citizens can't even defend themselves. Why don't we pray for courage? Why don't we pray for, you know, that the government would allow its citizens to be armed? Thank God we have the Second Amendment here, and I would conjecture, even though it's not a hard case rule, that if we have a situation like what happened in France, happened here in the United States, it's probably not going to be Tennessee or Texas. It's going to probably be Massachusetts or New York, where people's access to firearms is limited, and they can't carry. They're not allowed to without breaking the law. So that's what I would recommend for a school. And again, can a teacher say this to their students? Probably not, because it violates the standard, you know, get killed policy. Let's herd everybody into a corner. Let's herd everybody like a thing. Let's try to do things in a way that is approved. And in doing that, and being the appropriate, you're gonna die.
I mean, what do they tell you when you go into combat, Bob? Spread out. Bunch up. But what do they do in these classrooms? They want to bunch everybody together on one side to where someone comes in with a clip on an AK-47 and it's over. This is what I told one.
Well, they teach you to flank your enemy. Again, when you're at that door, you have flanking your enemy. I mean, you have a limited combat space there. So instead of being right in front, you're on his flank. That's necessarily going to happen. For that moment, you will be on his flank. When he comes in that door and your butt is like up against the wall, with that door, you're going to be on that guy's flank. And in being that, you have an opportunity to tackle this guy, get him down before he can bring his weapon to bear. And it works. It's shown over and over again. It's going to work. That action will beat his reaction 99.9% of the time. Sure, he might shoot one or two people. He might get some rounds off. But in doing so, he's not going to find a group of 20 people in the corner. You're going to aggressively go after this guy and try to disarm him or make sure the firearm's pointed in a safe direction, anything to do it. You will flank your enemy by doing that precise maneuver, but it's not a problem. I would say most teachers that would say something like that would probably be fired today because it doesn't meet standard, just the approval of the death mentality.
I actually had a school personnel ask me this question, what would you do? And I'd say, well, I would store a blunt object that's certainly not considered to be a weapon, you know, in conventional terms. And then when the trouble started, I would position myself in a crouched position by the door. I would get help, and I pretty much mentioned what you said, get the bigger guys to assist you, and when they come through that door, you're on them, and get the weapon, move back from the door, and use the weapon, train it on the door, and now you have a means to protect yourself, and maybe then it's wise not to run, because at least then you're in a defensible position. What do you think about that advice?
Well, of course, you know, a pen, a pencil, it's a stabbing weapon. You roll a magazine up, a book, I mean, you roll a magazine up from the side, do it one time. Just take a magazine, roll it up from the side, and then hit from the blunt end of that magazine. Just go out and buy yourself a watermelon one time or a cantaloupe or something and hit it with that, and you will smash that thing. A rolled-up magazine is a tremendous blunt-impact weapon. I mean, the schoolroom is filled with weapons. You have a trash can. You have desks. I mean, anything in that classroom that you can use, a pen and pencil is excellent just as a stabbing weapon. You can improvise a weapon fairly easily. And, yes, once you have taken that disarm that guy, you need to make sure law enforcement knows that the person holding the weapon is not the bad guy in case they do come through. But, you know, you can then go into a defensive position to where you have the means of self-protection. And, you know, if someone has a cell phone in there, you can call and say, I'm in the classroom, call the police, call 911. We have disarmed the guy. We have the weapon in our possession. Let law enforcement know what's going on there. You know, again, that's always the bad thing about using a weapon in public, if you need to, is the fact that, okay, is Dave a good guy or is he a bad guy? You really have to take that moment to look and see, well, Dave looks like he's not shooting just everybody. He's looking like he's pointing at that guy. If you're not going to make those critical decisions, you know, you just start wildly shooting away. Don't carry a gun. And again, you have to be concerned that when police show up, you might be the greatest guy in the world. But if you're shooting a gun, they're going to look. I mean, you have to be. You have to. That's where the situational awareness comes in. We go to church, and sometimes there's been law enforcement there for security, and I go up and told them I'm a concealed carry permit. I gave them some references of people they knew, and they vetted me out. And he said, "Okay, I understand you're carrying a firearm. If we tell you to put it down, put it down." I said, "Yes, sir. I'll put it down. I'll obey your instruction." So all of a sudden, I've let law enforcement that's in that place know, hey, okay, this guy has done and said he's done his due diligence. He's there to protect himself, but at the end of the day, he knows the rules. But if you do take that weapon, make sure you call 911 and say, listen, we're in classroom, whatever, we're here, whatever, movie theater, whatever, and we have a subject in, custody. We're holding him down. He's probably going to need hospitalization, and we have his weapon.
Bob, I have to be very candid here. I never advocate for violence except in self-defense. I'm not giving that guy a chance to make a second play for me.
Well, exactly.
If I get his gun, he's breathed his last breath.
Yes. You know, there's a thought, too, that if it was somebody like with Paris, I mean, there is an interrogation that can happen to that guy if he's brought into law enforcement to where they could find out maybe he's belong a cell, a group. Amazing when you know he's facing 30 years in prison or whatever, and he cooperates, he can get a reduced sentence. You know, the intelligence you can gather out of someone like that, it's always the thing you have to weigh.
Let me play devil's advocate, Bob. He goes for his ankle holster.
Oh, I would definitely, for me, I would definitely search him. I would definitely bind his hands. That's the other thing. When you're in line, when you're anywhere, always watch the hands. You can pay attention to their eyes because their eyes will say a lot, their head movement says a lot, but hands are what kill. Hands are what pull triggers. Hands are what you use in a knife. you had better develop this sense to watch people's hands, because that's what they're going to use to attack you, punch you, stab you, shoot you, is their hands. And so you start watching for those things. And again, this is situational awareness. It will not come easy. You are going to have to train yourself when you're out. If you're at Walmart, Kmart, the grocery store, the movie theater, start developing these techniques, because the odds that somebody listening right now is going to be in a situation that we're talking about in the next few years, I would say is a high order of probability. That somebody listening right now is going to be in a potential hostage situation, a potential robbery situation, maybe a home invasion, maybe a carjacking, and knowing what to do is critical. You know, we have that Shannon Christian and Christopher Newsom killing that was up in Knoxville. They were carjacked. It was 10 years ago now, or a little bit more. And it was brutal what they did to these people. But, you know, if they have just trained those two young people, they call it going to a secondary crime scene. You never go to the secondary crime scene. Now, somebody might be asking, what's a secondary crime scene? Okay, Dave, if you're in your car and I come up to you with my .45 and point in your face and say, move over, that's the primary crime scene right there. I've just committed a crime. We're in the parking lot. I've told you to move over. The secondary crime scene is when you do it. You move over, or I take you, I drive you to the little fun house I've got set up, and, you know, I start acting out whatever I want to act out. You will never survive the secondary crime scene. It doesn't matter. You can have a gun in your face. If you're in the parking lot, get shot in the parking lot. The odds of him shooting you to begin with are probably not going to happen, because he doesn't want to make that type of attention to himself. He's probably going to, you know, if you say no and start running, he's probably going to take off. I mean, granted, you might get shot, but most handgun wounds are not they're not fatal. Especially if you're moving, and again, if you're moving, the ability for him to hit you, I doubt if he's a trained marksman that he can hit you when you're moving. If you're moving in irregular patterns, you will save yourself over and over and over again. If you go to that secondary crime scene, as those two young people did, their death was heinous and brutal. It was protracted. Never go to that secondary crime scene. But again, these are times when to be situationally aware. You know, we have the zones. We've all heard it: the white zone, the yellow zone, the orange zone, the red zone. Well, there's also, they've discovered a new one, the black zone. And the black zone is when you've ignored all the warning signs, and all of a sudden it's there upon you. People go into what's called the black zone. That's when you have several conflicting hormones dumped into your body, norepinephrine, adrenaline, and you just freeze. And again, that's probably what happened to the people in the movie theater. That's probably what happened to the people at the restaurant. They've never thought through these scenarios that it could happen to me. They never stood in line and looked around and said, that guy could be problems. If that guy was a problem, what would I do? They never started training their mind that way. Okay, that guy, he looks like he could be a problem. If he went south, what would I do? Where would I go? How would I respond? They've never worked these scenarios out in their mind, and in doing that, they ensure that they're going to fall into this black zone where they just freeze. I mean, there are people that literally, during these times, cannot dial 911. They can't put their keys in the ignition because their whole body, when the black zone has been likened to pushing your foot on the brake and pushing the foot on the accelerator as hard as you can on both of them at the same time. I mean, the engine's running full speed, but the brake's on. And when you're in that situation, you're going to die. A large amount of Americans live in what you call the white zone, the oblivious zone. They just walk around, don't pay attention to anything. Their face is buried in that cell phone. I mean, I watch these young people all the time, especially a younger girl or something like that. You look at her, and she's just got her face buried. She's saying, I'm a victim. And you see what's happening as these people have been invading Europe. I mean, the amount of assault against women has skyrocketed. And a lot of these women are just completely situationally unaware. I mean, again, this is where you don't be a hero, and this is what I mean. It's like, if I'm walking down the street and I see some people that just give me the willies, I'm not going to be, oh, my God, I can handle it. I'm going to walk through. I'm going to walk the other way. I'm going to avoid them. And a lot of these women should see what's coming up on them, and they shouldn't just keep walking ahead saying, well, this is, I'm in the public, I'm here. There was a woman in Sweden recently. She was, this Muslim guy, you know, she was walking home, he attacked her, and as he was raping her, he was spitting in her face. And then he went back to the pub and told his buddy, and then his buddy went out and found her again when she was trying to get home and did the same thing to her and spit in her face while he was raping her. I mean, that's terrible. But again, I would have said that lady had probably just been a little situationally aware and realized, I got to avoid this. That might not have happened. Now, is it the woman's fault? Heck no. I mean, these animals that do this thing, I mean, you know, I think we both have an idea what we should do to them. I mean, you know, excuse me, I'd drown them in pig urine or something. But, gosh, just start to develop that mentality. And I cannot tell you, friends that have been through critical situations, I've been through some critical situations, and maintaining your head, maintaining a plan, and keep that adaptability of saying, I have options. I can go here.
Well,
I can do
here. Let me interject this. I want to go back. I do agree with you. Most people are wimpy by nature. They're not trained. They don't know how to deal with these situations. So when they get into that proverbial black zone and they feel frozen, are there any strategies that the person who's already panicked can employ, or
no.
Is it too late? It's too late.
It's pretty much too late. Once you've allowed yourself to get to there, and again, it's called noticing baselines. We all notice a baseline. I mean, you know, what does my street normally look like when I'm going home? What does the interstate normally look like when I'm on it? What does, you know, the supermarket normally look like when I'm there? And a lot of times, so keep maintaining those baselines when something starts to appear abnormal. I mean, a baseline, an easy one. Start seeing newspapers packed up in somebody's yard. What does that tell you? The baseline's broken. They know all of a sudden that nobody's getting their mail. Nobody's picking up their newspapers. Even the news, that date myself saying newspapers because I don't think too many people get them anymore. But, you know, what I'm saying is you start to notice that which is not normal for the environment you're in. Again, in doing that, you maintain that yellow zone, that situational aware zone. You know, you go from white to yellow, and it's a zone that's pretty easy to stay in until you go to sleep. And if you maintain that and notice those baselines, everywhere you go, there's a baseline. What is normal for this environment? And in doing that, then, you know, you keep yourself from going into higher levels of zone. The orange zone is when you notice the situation, and that's when you don't be a hero if you don't need to be. You avoid it. You know, if I can avoid a conflict, I'm going to avoid it. Granted, I might be 6'10" and weigh 300 pounds, but it doesn't matter. If I have a 45 and put one right between your running lights because you wanted to be, you know, something you shouldn't have been at that time, then you're going to die. Now, I'm not saying we run away when somebody is being hurt, but again, if I can see a potential situation where, you know, I'm walking down the street or I'm in an environment, you know, if I have one route that goes to one section and another route goes to another section and I know the one route is safer, take the extra 10 minutes and go the safer route. Avoid it. Just because you can go through the unsafe route doesn't mean you need to do it. So when I say don't be a hero, I don't mean if you see someone being victimized or brutalized that you don't step in. What I mean by that is avoid the potential for conflict anytime you can avoid it. And a lot of times by doing that, staying in that yellow zone, you will not ever get to the red or black zone. You know, the red zone is when you have to fight. And once people get to that point and they freeze, like I would say that 99.9% of people did in Paris, you know, the odds of them survivability is going to be totally at the mercy of those guys pulling the trigger.
Well, you're dead. I mean, you know, I think when you're in that kind of concert hall that they were in, you're dead. You have to decide how you want to die. You want to die like a coward? Or do you want to die running away trying to effect an escape? Or do you want to try to overwhelm one of the attackers and get their gun? To me, laying down and doing nothing is not an option.
Yeah, trying to and somehow rely on the good morals of the person trying to kill everybody is going to be insanity. You're going to die. Again, a moving target is hard to hit. For those people who've never shot a gun or don't shoot very often, just do that. If you can get out in the woods somewhere and you can put a rope on a tree and you can put something on it, a bottle, whatever, and you just swing it back and forth like a pendulum, try to hit that thing from close range. You probably won't do it. It's difficult. a trained shooter. It takes trained shooters to do that. Now even the shooter, he's probably not trained. You get these guys in Paris, there probably weren't high level of training as far as being as far as their fire discipline. They might have had training on what to do and how to do it, but their fire discipline probably was not well trained. And so if you were moving at irregular angles out and trying to get to an exit, I would say there's a pretty good chance you would have survived that scenario. But I would, at the same time, I would say most people went into black zone immediately, and they froze, they panicked, and they didn't know what to do, and they're dead.
Yeah, I agree. Let me change the scenario for a second. We had talked this afternoon, and I want to go through this briefly. You take your son to the mall, and you talked about situational awareness that you take advantage of just by being out in public. So you go to the mall, and you're entering the mall. What kinds of things do you tell your son to notice?
Well, first of all, exits. Exits are huge. We want to know exits. Again, as I mentioned earlier, we try not to go to a situation like that. That's why I never go to a big movie. When the next big movie comes out, I will not be there on its opening night, even if I want to see it. High-profile sporting events, any kind of high-profile event, shopping on Black Friday, we avoid those. I don't go out on New Year's Eve driving around. I avoid those high incident nights and times because that's when bad things happen. So again, I don't need to be the hero. I don't need to go driving out 2 o'clock in the morning on New Year's Day. The odds of meeting somebody who's inebriated is probably pretty good. So avoid those things. Go to the mall when there's during the middle of the day when there's not as many people at work. And active shooter's going to realize, well, gosh, it's not going to be real effective to go there. Now, that's not to mean he can't show up. It's just going to be less likely. He'll show up at 7 o'clock when it's packed on a Friday night because he gets a high body count. So avoid those critical times. Now, with Joshua, what he does, he knows when we're walking through that mall, we're always scanning. We have little code words. Dad, something's on your six. He'll tell me if he sees something on my six, Dad, check your six. We have a little code phrase that we use. He'll say, Echo Tango, Dad, check your six, whatever. And that way I know that he sees something that he doesn't like. So we're walking around the mall active. We also know with those exits in mind, he knows two things. Now, first of all, if I'm with him and there's an active shooter situation, I'm not going to be the hero. I'm not going to pull my gun. My goal is to get him out of that theater, out of that mall, out of the situation. I am going to get my son out of there as quick as I can. Now, he also knows that if I did draw a weapon, and drawing the weapon to me would be the worst case, because that means I have allowed myself to get in a situation that I have greatly compromised myself, because if I start slinging lead, the guys are probably going to be slinging lead back to me, and so my son knows, as much as he doesn't might not want to, you get away from Dad, you get to that exit, and you get out of there, because if I do have to draw a weapon and start shooting, I become a bullet magnet for the other guy. So, he knows to get away from me, and I mean get away from me. I would scream at him to get away from me if he didn't do it. Get away from me and get him out of there. So that those are the kind of things that we do. Now, again, this sounds terrible that we live in a society that we have to talk to our children about these things. I mean, just think about what we used to talk about growing up in 8, 9 years old. I'd go out all day long. My parents wouldn't know where I was at. I was out playing in the woods, whatever. Today, the world has changed. And so we better talk to our children about this, because there's how many school shootings, how many mall shootings, how many with dead children. And if maybe, some of these children that have died at schools or died in the malls or died like this, Shannon Kristen, Christopher Newsom, if they had just had maybe had a little training of active shooter situations, of hijack situations, of maintaining what you know what your baseline is, being adaptable, having a plan, situational awareness, if they had any of those trainings at all, I would dare say some of those children would be alive today. I say that carefully, because I know there's parents out there that might have lost a child, and it's terrible that parents would have to even think of these things. But we're living in a world that's becoming clearer and more obvious that we do have to think about these things. And if any parent has lost a child because of an active shooter or a bad guy or whatever, you know, your heart does go out to them, no matter what. It's painful. It's horrible. But there are things that we can do to try to mitigate those threats that, like I said, somebody listening right now, them, their children, their loved one, or even an innocent victim, I mean, bystander, they might come across is going to be the recipient of violence. And knowing what to do when that violence happens, knowing how to react, can make the difference between life and death. Hopefully, you save your life and you create the death of the bad guy. So that's what I have to say about that. You know, again, it goes into this whole thing, the prepper community. I mean, you know, we just read this thing that Ted Koppel, he wrote that book, Lights Out. I mean, the mainstream is starting to catch on that we live in a very vulnerable infrastructure here. You know, I don't know if it's true or not, but I read online today that Ted Koppel's storing food and water because he realizes that the EMP, the electrical infrastructure, could go down. More and more people are starting to catch on to these things. And so having that plan, that what goes back to the other thing is, you know, be self-reliant. If you are dependent on somebody right now for anything, if you're dependent on for health care, that you have to have health care, if you're dependent on, you know, for government assistance, whatever it is, if you're dependent on somebody, that makes you vulnerable. Now, nobody is everything. I mean, John Rambo does not exist in real life, you know. So there's always that thing of having the network, and you're not going to be good at everything. But, you know, the Spec Ops guys, they try to cross-train as wide a thing they can. Know some medical skills. How do you stop bleeding? If you came across and you were in that shooter situation and somebody's having an arterial bleeding, do you panic? And you just watch that blood squirt out of their body and just panic while they die? You know, again, maintaining that, have a plan. If there's that situation, I carry a Celox A with me pretty much everywhere I go. Celox A is a hemostatic blood stopping agent. It'll stop arterial blood. I can just stick it in the wound, squirt it in there, and hopefully maybe stop the leaking and save somebody's life. I pretty much carry it with me everywhere we go, because I have a plan ahead of time. So these are the things we really start having to do. Become self-reliant. As I said, if you're dependent on somebody else, it's a weakness. Do you have all that is necessary? Are you spending your time? And again, we cut the TV off years ago, and I'm telling you, Dave, the amount of knowledge I was able to accumulate after I stopped watching mindless stupidity on TV has been overwhelming, because I have hours a day now that I used to be sitting there maybe doing something. I can be studying, reading, learning, teaching, doing that. I can be cross-training. For those of you who bought night vision, have you ever used it? Have you ever gone out at night and tried to do a hike with night vision on? Again, I'm training with what I have. I'm putting it to use, so I know that when, you know, push comes to shove and I need what I've purchased, do I really know how to use it? Very, very important. You know, we put ourselves in a position a lot of times to be vulnerable or to be self-reliant. The choice is ours. We can choose either way. Unfortunately, a lot of Americans choose to put themselves in positions of vulnerability. We're vulnerability because we're so dependent on a system. We're vulnerable because we are just mindlessly absorbed into cell phones while we're, you know, I mean, there are stories, Dave, where people have actually been in crime situations that they didn't even know what happened because they were just so engrossed into a video game or texting or whatever. They just didn't even know that the crime situation was going on. You know, put that cell phone down. I said there's one good thing for a cell phone is that it has a reflective surface on it, and it is good for watching your six. If anybody has a cell phone right now, pick it up, look into the cell phone, and it's a mirror. You can see what's behind you. If you're walking down the street holding a cell phone in front of your face, it's not that abnormal to see that happening. But at the same time, you're looking in that reflective surface of that glass on the cell phone, and I can watch my six really well and see if there is something behind me that I need to know about.
Yeah, that's good advice to live by. Boy, I wish we had more time to develop this idea. Can you do this in 2 minutes? Can you talk about the strategy to attack a school if you're a terrorist, which you told me this afternoon?
Well, I think William Fortune wrote the book, Day of Wrath. I mean, they developed concentric circles of attack where they have, you know, a group going into a school that's going to do the shooting, and then they have a group outside the school that's going to deal with the first responders, and they have a group further away from the school that's going to create traffic problems for people, the first responders, to even get there. And in doing that, it allows more time for the bad guy inside the school to do what he's going to do. We see this kind of sophistication. I don't want to give too many people any ideas, but you know, these people are becoming more and more sophisticated in how they will attack a situation. This event in Paris proves that. It was well coordinated and thought through. They knew exactly how to do it, and they play upon people's weaknesses and fears. And again, all the more reason to develop a strategy of resistance if you are in that school. And you know, help might not be coming there. We always think the police could be able to rush in and save everybody, but you know, if there's somebody outside that school that has been set up to deal with the first responder showing up, that's going to cause the school to set up a perimeter before they start to even try to enter the school, or wait for heavier equipment to come, and that time means lives. It means more people are going to die. So again, having those strategies and knowing what to do if you are in that situation, where you're just not going to sit down in the corner and pray for the good mercy of your the murderer that's in there, and knowing how to maybe engage him in a brutal manner. And again, the flanking is an excellent manner. I mean, you know, most people do not pay attention to their peripherals. That's why in a high stress situation, police, law enforcement, anybody is trained to keep your head on a swivel. You naturally get tunnel vision. You naturally are looking at that door. You have the ability to spin your head and look around. Most people will not do that. Train yourself to do that. I mean, I have a good friend, Mark. He's very good with this type of stuff. And that's when I met him 25 years ago. He said, first thing you do when you walk out of a building, look up and down. Look at the roof lines. Look at this. Look at that. Do a scenario. Keep your head on that swivel. Look around. If you see something you don't like, avoid it. And again, so when that guy comes through the door and you've flanked yourself up against the concrete block wall, and you rush and tackle him because you're only inches away from him if you're right at the door jam, you know, do it like that, because again, these key people are going to get higher levels of sophistication. They're going to start employing military tactics, and you have to be able to employ them back.
We've been talking with Robert Griswold from readymaderesources.com, and to find out about his fine list of products, things that can enhance your survivability on a number of different with a number of different variables on a number of different levels, I would encourage you to visit readymaderesources.com. You can give Bob a call tomorrow at 1-800-627-3809, and you can take advantage of the chat feature that he has. Bob, riveting stuff. I feel like I'm on an adrenaline rush right now here. I'm sitting here tapping my foot. Okay, I'm ready to spring into action, but unfortunately we're out of time.
I do like
for
to mention
segment.
Something. Anybody would order a Berkey tonight, Berkey with four black filters, we're going to throw in the Sawyer Mini Filter free. So that's a little filter you can carry in your pocket. It's 4 ounces. It does 100,000 gallons. If you order a Berkey and you mention Dave Hodges on the comments section, we're going to include that in there. A big Berkey with four black filters is $359. We're going to include that as a $25 water filter, and it does 100,000
awesome.
Gallons of water.
Got to scoot. Bob, thanks so much. We'll see everybody on the other side with Katie Whalen and our health report.